My name is Ashley, and this is Let's Talk Dispatch.
I do. You're gonna do it. Do it really well.
And I believe the world needs more dispatchers.
Around in the mud, blood,
plus
beer.
Years that I'm not working 4th of July. 4th of July.
Hey, community policing, right? What about community dispatching?
So on this show, with the help of my guests, we will educate, empower, and support the heroes behind the headset. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode here on Let's Talk Dispatch with me, Ashley, the Raspy Dispatcher. Today, I posted a reel that was kind of funny, making a joke about pizza parties and, you know, kind of that meme idea of, you know, supervisors buying everyone pizza just to show them they're appreciated. You know, it's definitely that time of year when the idea of giving and showing people love and showing people that you care about them is at the forefront of our minds. And I just want to remind us all outside of the pizza party, you know, we are the folks who make up our center, the folks in the seats every single day. We create the environment that we work in, that we thrive in. And though it is important that leadership, especially our department heads, our supervisors, if you're in a law enforcement or type of vibe, you know, our brass contribute to the success of our centers, as well as our supervisors down. But we, as folks who are not in supervisory roles, also have to own a lot of how we are bringing the energy to our centers. Another unpopular opinion is our supervisors need love too during this time of year. And although we should be, if you are a supervisor, finding ways that you can, you know, give your people some extra love and attention during this time of year. Us folks who are supervised from those people, you know, who's doing that for them? So definitely consider all of that during this time of year and going into your 2024. If you're listening and we're already there, welcome. You know, this is something we can do all year long from January 2024 through 2025. Start a new vibe, create a new aspect in your center. So something to think about during this time of year. With all that being said, we're going to get over to our guest today, who has over 17 and a half years of experience as a dispatcher in a small rural center. They've been a training officer for 14 of those years, as well as the coordinator. My voice is not appreciating it today, guys, but she has also been a coordinator of the local multi-agency peer support team, as well as Oregon's APCO Wellness Committee director. So with all that being said, we're going to talk about such wonderful things. My guest today, Cammie. Hi, hey. Cammie.
Hi, and I'm on the APCO Wellness Committee. I am thankfully not a director of it.
Did I misread that?
I don't know. I may have said, I don't know.
Well, you know what? We just promoted her. So for those APCO folks listening in Oregon, you know, I'm not saying do it, but maybe, you know, just we're putting a thigh here.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. But I loved what you started with, because earlier here, like we were talking about before this, I had done a webinar with Halcyon, and she was asking me about my first year as director. So I just took over as director of our center like about 2 years ago. And one of my bullet points on the PowerPoint was that employee appreciation is more than pizza parties. Because you see that everywhere. And it's not that like supervisors aren't trying. I think sometimes what it is they're just like, I got to do something. And like, that's the easy go-to. But really it's like, it appreciation is so much more than that, especially like when the pizza gets to night shift and it's like you hope there's a toaster oven or a microwave to remedy the situation that's been left over. But yeah. I mean, it just, in especially where you're talking about, you know, anyone can affect the environment of their center. I've always, you know, been a big fan of your center's what you make it, whether you're in a supervisory role or not. It, you know, goes from the top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. It takes everybody. It takes a team to really make that environment good. So I was so excited to hear you start with that, 'cause I'm like, oh, the pizza party thing. I was like,
I know my coworkers are like, you voted for the pizza because yesterday they brought us, we got to pick our meal and we picked pizza. But I took that opportunity to twist it for real for social media. But it's true. I mean, like it just goes such a long way. And I think sometimes when we're in the middle of a culture shift or a culture change, like it feels icky. It doesn't feel good.
Right.
You know, folks who have been feeling bad or mistreated, for lack of any better words, by their department are going to be stuck in kind of the things won't change.
Right.
But you also have to be willing to fight for change and communicate constructively and provide positive feedback, because one thing, no one's changing if we're not talking about it. You know, if we're only talking to each other, you know, on some, you know, gossipy, complaining type of situations, if we're not communicating well, how do we expect anyone to change?
Right, right. No, and I was just going to say, like, you nailed it on the head, the communication and like the gossip or the like extreme, quote unquote, venting at shift change or on shift. Mm-hmm. Isn't the communication like the communication is, you know, working things out, you know, between each other and finding out maybe why somebody's feeling a certain way or is reacting a certain way. Because there's always more than what's on the surface. Yeah. Right. And mm-hmm. really learning about each other. Like I'm really big on relationships. I love developing relationships and, you know, having those meaningful relationships with other people in your center. Mm-hmm. Is really kind of what makes things, you know, cohesive and can smooth things over.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes a long way, right? I've referenced Drew's interview with me a couple times, but I believe he just took a job as a director. So go Drew, if you're listening. But he said in our interview, like, you have to show up for your people on blue sky days. And that really resonated with me because like we always see our supervisor when something's amiss and something needs to be corrected or coached or, you know, mm-hmm. and if I'm only seeing you when I'm in trouble, my body's going to have a negative response to you just naturally reacting to your presence. You know, like we have to have a relationship that's professional and constructive outside of you critiquing me, you know?
Right. No, that's good. And I had an employee that actually said, you know, I like, because I try to, when we have things that come up that maybe take, you know, need some new direction or there is going to be some critiquing, I try to take it as a learning experience. Like, hey, this is what happened. This went well. This is kind of a struggle. So let's learn from it, move from it, and then just go from there. But, some of my employees prefer like email, some prefer like a quick text about something. And so, you know, I'll text and be like, hey, you know, give me it. Cause I try to be respectful of like when people sleep. Yeah. So I'll send them a text and be like, hey, give me a call when you wake up. And then in all caps, nothing bad, not an emergency.
My supervisor does that too.
Right. Because I just know like, because me, I've done it too. Like somebody's like, hey, can you give me a call? And it's like, why?
Like, why? Call. We don't gotta talk.
Like, what's going on? But no, it's true. It's just human nature sometimes. And I especially think like in our roles where we like live kind of in worst case scenario, borrowed worry, like it's natural for us. I like to say that's what makes me good at my job is living on at work, borrowed worry, paranoia, and assuming worst case scenario. It really sharpens my skills, which that's probably not the case, but it's like that's kind of where we live. And so it's easy to assume those things.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes such a long way. You know, like I always tell my like soup when they have to force me in or like, you know, call me in on my day off. It's like, I know you don't want to do this. Like, I know, like, I like to give them that feedback. You know, it's like your job when they're creating our schedules, trying to make a change in our, you know, shift signups. It's just like this scheduling is a tough job. When I was a case manager, when I did social work, we did 24-hour care. Managing 24-hour care, which is what we're doing for our cities, our departments, our officers, our units. It's managing 24-hour care. And it's just, it's not like any other job where if so-and-so calls out, we can just run down one, you know, like that phone, that seat needs to be filled. And, you know, being a supervisor is a tough job, you know? And I think what I've experienced with supervisors who might not be excelling the way I think they can is a level of complacency and a lack of intention, where like, right. I'm just kind of going to do my bare minimum. I'm going to get the schedule out. I'm going to, you know, check the boxes, but I'm not going to intentionally interact with my employees. I'm not going to intentionally build relationships. And it just, that intention, it goes a long way. It feels authentic. Like, we need that in our centers, especially from our supervisors.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm very fortunate in that we're a small center. Like, I don't want to jinx myself, but we need one more part-timer.
You guys hear that?
I know, one more part-timer, which is super easy when there's only like six of us. There's only 1,700 people in town. So it's like, but like, because we're such a small center, like, we all get to develop like really like meaningful relationships with each other or learn about each other because we work so, well, I say work so closely, even though we work one at a time. But I mean, with such a small staff, we really see each other, and it's, I feel like that's a great benefit I have as a director, is to actually know my people one-on-one.
Yeah. Well, we dove right in. We're 11 minutes in, and I haven't even had you introduce yourself, because that's how amazing this conversation. No, we like dove in and it was perfect. But I do want you to tell the folks who you are, how you got into public safety, so they know who they're getting all this wonderful information from.
You're so kind. No. But so I'm Cammie Haney. I'm the director at the Grant County 911 Center in Eastern Oregon. We have a population for the entire county of, I believe, about, is it like 4,500? With, I don't know, the county seat where I live is like 1,700 people. So it's incredibly, incredibly rural. Like I just talked about, very small staff, but love it. I got into dispatching because I was one of those kids from kind of like a law enforcement family. So my mom was a corrections deputy for about 9 years, and my stepdad was a police officer and then eventually police chief. And I was working at a pharmacy, like at the pharmacy register. And then they had, it was kind of like a Rite Aid, like a local Rite Aid kind of thing. But I was working there, and I just wanted a job with better wages and benefits. And someone was like, you should apply. And I'm like, all right. So
the simple things. That's all we're looking for.
Sure, why not? Like, so, and I applied, and you know, there were several other applicants, but thankfully, like, I earned my way and I got it. And that was kind of it, the start for me. And I was one of those that I was the girl in town that you saw everywhere because I would job hop. So I think before I started dispatching, I'd had, like, starting as a teenager, like 13 jobs.
Oh, wow. I know. Like, my resume was a little thick, but
and then later as an adult, like, and I found out that, like, dispatchers that have ADD, I mean, they can do like a rock star phenomenal job because of like that, you know. And so that's really, I think, what helped me, because then when I started dispatching, you know, just my first few weeks into training, I was like, I feel like I'm home. Like, this is where I belong. This is where. Yeah, well, walking in the door and not knowing, hey, like, is it just going to be like an onslaught of like craziness, or am I gonna be just like an admin day of like, you know, civil calls and that kind of stuff? And I just really loved it and thrived on it. And then being able to, you know, just serve the public, and especially, you know, in areas like this, I'm not just, you know, serving the public, I'm serving, you know, friends and family members, and it's really special. But I'm glad I, you know, took the opportunity and did it because I wanted better pay. It worked out well.
Hey, man, for real. Up our pay. We need more money. It's a tough job. But, you know, this is one of the things that, you know, I'm from California. I'm from the city. I spent some time in, I would say, extremely rural Iowa for college. They had one stoplight in town, and it was just such a culture shift. And now, you know, being in law enforcement or being in, you know, emergency services, and connecting that time in that space to what I'm doing now and talking to folks. I have a friend out there who became a dispatcher too, who came on the show early when we were just getting started. And we talked about like dispatching in rural areas in the Midwest and like towns that have like a lot of weather impacting them.
Yeah.
And it's just night and day different from the reality that I live in. And it's something that's so important because I imagine there is just as many small centers as there are big centers.
Right.
And you guys have an experience and a way of doing this job that we can all learn from. Before we continue, we wanted to take a moment to thank our partners at Prepared. You can learn more about the awesome support and technology Prepared provides to first responders by heading to prepared911.com. Partners like Prepared help to continue our mission of supporting, empowering, and educating the heroes under the headset. You can learn more about our resources and partnerships by heading to theraspydispatcher.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, I've visited, like, I have friends that work at, you know, other large centers. Like, so I'm about half hours from Boise, but like 5 hours, 5.5 hours from Portland. So like we're really on the east side, but I have friends that, you know, work on that side of the state, and I've been to their centers, and I go in and it's just like so neat to see like all the different like techie stuff and like the, you know, the fancy like dimmed lights and, you know, all this coolness. But like when I watch them work, like what's hard for me is that I can't imagine, this was probably some control stuff, but I can't imagine taking a phone call and then passing it on to someone else to take care of the rest of it. So like where they have, you know, call takers and dispatchers, I'm like, no, I want my call from beginning to end. And it's kind of, it's really fun in a way where I'm like taking the call and dispatching the call and going back and stuff, you know, back and forth with stuff, you know, coordinating different units. And it's just, I just love it. I just love it. So like when I look at that aspect of it, I'm like, man, I think that would be kind of rough for me. But at the same time, like it's hard being by yourself because like we had a fire that came through in, I think, 2015. And I was working by myself and it got hectic enough that I had to call in my supervisor. And so there was two of us working. And I mean, it, like, you know, I talk about being a small community. It took out like 40 houses.
Wow.
And like, I think like 100 outbuildings. And it was one of those, like, you know, just one of those core traumatic, you know, career memories. But to be, there's just like two of us handling all of this massive call volume and all of this. And it got to the point where, you know, one of the deputies that was working it was just like yelling thing after thing after thing over the radio. And we can always tell when things get elevated because occasionally we'll start using names. So like he says on the radio, like, hey, Cams, I'm throwing a lot of traffic out at you. I just at least want it recorded on the recording. I'm like, okay. So it's just, the names, you know, and the way we address each other shift and it becomes much more personal. So it's, yeah, there's just a lot of interesting things, pros and cons to it.
Yeah. So you work in, is that your guys' minimum one? Are you working, unless there's a major incident, with just one person?
Yeah. So it's interesting because thinking back at major incidents that we've had, like there's been several calls where like, you know, I've just all of a sudden, like I have every one of my 911s, every one of my admin lines, like my radio's going crazy and I'm just like booking through it. And then like it used to be like one of the road people would call like the supervisor and be like, hey, you might want to get in there and help her. Cause like, when am I going to call and, and ask for someone else to come in? Right. Yeah. And thankfully that's kind of what's happened. And, you know, it's, but for the most part, you just got to power through it. I had like one of my most embarrassing moments and I don't even, when I get in really awkward, uncomfortable situations, sometimes I just say really stupid stuff.
Don't we all?
And so I was working this fire by myself and it had kind of like gone all around, like we're kind of in a valley here and it had gone on the hill, like down one side of the valley, kind of behind my house. And then it was like a different lightning strike on the other side of the valley. And I'm just in there, you know, kind of treading water, like keeping up with everything.
Yeah, just keep typing. Just keep typing.
And one of the patrol units comes in and looks at me and goes, "What are you doing here by yourself?" And I looked at him. I'm like, "I guess just being awesome." That was my response. And then he left. And I'm like, I will think about that comment for like the rest of my life. It's going to be like when you have one of those memories from second grade.
Yeah.
Mull over every night at like 3 a.m. just being awesome.
My God.
But I'm really not that confident.
Like, so accurate, you know? Like, I went from a big center to a small center, you know? So now on the back half, overnight, you know, midnight, really 3 a.m. on, we're two. But when I first started there, our minimum was two. And well, I guess our minimum still is two, but we were running with two more often than not. And I came from a big agency. I mean, we had 15 call takers, maybe. Holy on God. on a good day, 10 on a bad. I mean, and then you had radio. I mean, so the idea of just me and one other person was a really tough thing to get used to, like being able to really triage in that way that I don't think anyone really gets until it's just you and one other person. Like, it's just a level of, hello, you good? Did you saw it? They're not there no more. Gotta go. You know, like, it's really like you're flying through these calls. And just the idea of doing it solo. It's just, I don't think I could imagine doing it. And like, well, you said.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because, when we do have incidents and like two of us end up working, because like during the day there'll be a dispatcher dispatching, and then ideally like I'll be doing admin, so like I'm in my office like right off the dispatch. But when we have to like throw in and work two of us at the time, like, it's interesting to see like how do our dynamics work, because we don't usually work with another person.
So, like, how
and so it, you know, when we had, like, I was talking about that fire, it was interesting how, you know, it's like not that we would butt heads, but our style, we would both be like, you know, occasionally we'd have two of us together that were very type A, very do everything. And so working with each other was kind of like this. And then you'd have somebody else who was like, you know, a little more, not necessarily passive, but like easygoing. And I could be like, okay, I need you to do this and this and that. It's like, okay. And it's just,
and then like
on the fly to have that thrown together. We're like, well, here we go.
And I think when things start popping off, right, you kind of fall into habit. You fall into routine, you fall into training. And if you're trained solo to respond, you're like, you're going to start doing, okay, I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to do that. And all of a sudden you're here and they're doing that too. You're like, wait, what are you doing here? I'm supposed to do this, you know? So it's definitely a different dynamic in working, I would imagine, with one additional person, especially in an already heightened situation. I'm sure if they even have to be there in the first place. So, what was it like for you in the beginning? You know, you're a director now, you've been in this business a long time and doing amazing things. Like, what was it like when you first started, you got that, you know, big girl paycheck, you know, what was that like for you?
You know, it's hard to kind of remember because it feels like it's been a long time, but not that long. I remember it like when I started on, like when I was cut loose on my own, like I remember I started on graveyards and graveyards here, like you could go all night with like maybe one phone call or no calls or just calling the jail. It's like, hey, is someone else here? Like I got a friend. Like, weird story. I was by myself one night on a graveyard and I threw in some popcorn to pop it. I forgot, like my brain moved on. I forgot I put the popcorn in, and all of a sudden I'm hearing bam, bam, bam. And I'm like, then I realized, oh,
call three cover to the center.
Myself a snack. That's what's going on. Whoops. But and so like I would work graveyards, and I remember when I first started, I would just like sit there at the console and like almost not move all night and just stare at the phone. And then I remember like my first 911 call by myself was a guy, you know, with his wife called because he was having some discomfort and chest pain. And like, I'm rocking that EMD. And, you know, I get off the phone and I was like, that was super intense. That was so intense. You know?
Whoa.
I'm made for this.
Yeah, like, oh, no one else is here.
Oh, it's just like, it was just
being awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, if anybody watches this, I know they're gonna be like, oh my gosh, but no,
I'm just saying, I don't know. I think this might become a shirt. I don't know. I'm feeling it, I like it.
Yeah, but I just remember, like, you know, it was a lot of things like that. I remember one of the first complaints that I put out over the radio, like in training, mm-hmm. like I was so nervous about it. And it was somebody who called in a driving complaint on some people that were like riding ATVs. They were going too fast. They were kicking up dust, even though they were being reckless. Mm-hmm. And so I go to put it out over the radio, and I know I'm not the only one that's done this, but instead of saying they're driving erratically, like all of a sudden they're out in the rural area driving around erotically. And of course, everybody's listening, like the phones start blowing up. They call in to make fun of me. My training officer's just dying. And I'm like, and I tried to just like defend. I said erratically, but it was clear on the recording that.
It's what the reporting party said. I don't know.
Right. Right.
I don't know how they interpreted it.
But yeah, there was no denying. Once I played that back, I was like, oh. But it was fun just kind of, you know, learning my place, learning like what my, because, you know, as you go, you know, you're training, you have different trainers, and each one, like the meat and potatoes of it are the same. Mm. But they each sometimes I feel like have a different style. So it was interesting to get out on my own and be like, okay, I know the basics, I know what I need to do. What works from each trainer, and what's my style going to be like, what's comfortable for me. And that's what I try and tell my trainees too, because I still train occasionally. I'm like, you know, hey, I'm gonna do this, and this is how I do it. As long as you're doing these things correctly, that's important. I function out of this screen, your next trainer may function out of that screen. When you're done, if she does something that works better for you, do that. If I do it in a way that works better for you, do that. Like, make a way that it works for you. So it was interesting to figure out, like, going out on my own, what that was going to be like.
It's always interesting, right? Because it's having multiple trainers is so helpful because of that, right? You get to see everyone's style, the way they do things, and you get to take pieces and put it in your tool belt. But it's also, as the trainee, extremely stressful because you just spent, let's say, 2 weeks doing it, you know, Cammy's way, and then now you're at Ashley's door and you're like, ah, no, we're not doing it that way, you know, I'm gonna show you a different way to do it. Or, you know, and a lot of trainers, training is such a hard job, you know what I mean? Like, training is tough. I don't know if we give them enough credit for folks who train baby dispatchers, but, you know, we get trained in their comfort, because that's how, because you got to be able to move quickly, right? Doing this thing. And it can be really stressful for the trainee, because it's like, I just did it for 2 weeks this way.
Right.
And now you're telling me to shift completely and do it that way. And for those who are in training, I've been there twice because my silly self lateraled. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, training is a beast, let alone getting into this job. Training is a beast because you're just constantly being critiqued, and you can feel attacked a little bit.
Right.
But in reality, if we're off training, if anyone listened to our calls, like if our supervisors really plugged in and listened to our calls the way we listen to a trainee's calls, they mm-hmm. will always have feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Even as a full-grown dispatcher, you can always provide feedback. That's why our training is so ruthless, because it's like, man, I feel like I can't do nothing right. But the reality is, in this job especially, you can always improve something. That's right. Why our DORs be looking hectic sometimes.
I know. Well, and that's why I like to prep them for that, because I don't want them to feel like, you know, I'm going through, you know, from Cammy, who is my trainer, you know, and my director, you know, who says that this is the way things are done, and then go to someone else. And it's like, how do I contradict that? And so that's why I try to set it up like, hey, you know, this might happen, and that's okay. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, because we'll do like a few weeks with me, and then maybe a few weeks with the next one. And, you know, then in the past, the way it had been before I was director is that I would kind of work with them their final week and a half to do like a sign off. Mm-hmm. And if I would see them doing something that like the previous trainer taught them, I'm like, go for it. Or like I had a trainee one time that was like super tech savvy. Like I'm not super tech savvy, but this kid, man, he could toggle through screens like no other. And so I was trying to tell him like, you know, okay, you're, you know, here's in CAD. Now you need to go to this system. And he did like the super fast, like, I don't know what he did. I still to this day, I just know his fingers were like, and he was at a screen faster than I had ever been there. And I looked at him, I'm like, I don't know what you did, but it worked. So go ahead and just do that. Like, I'm not going to make him listen to me. Like, okay, you need to go here and then go. Like, why? Better than I'll probably ever do it. Yeah. It's that, it's that fine balance as a trainer of like, I try to make sure that, you know, there's, if you're going to critique, you got to give us something good with them too. Do you know what I mean? Like you don't just want to wear them down all the time. You don't want to make them hate the job. You don't want to make them hate training. Like I want them to come in and be excited about learning and exciting about their career. You know, that's like, I really strongly feel it's overlooked that a lot of your culture in your center starts with your trainers. Like you got to watch your trainers. You got to see like, you know, are they getting burnt out? You know, what's the mood? Are, you know, what's the training looking like? Because that sets the tone for that new dispatcher's career and mindset in the center. And so if you don't have a good trainer, like, you know, that could make things go downhill. That can make things really difficult.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I think a lot of times that I've witnessed in smaller centers, at least, is like the same person gets stuck training. Cause you know, our turnover is wonderful here in the world of dispatch. And, you know, our trainers can get burnt out. It's like, it's so taxing to be responsible for someone in an officer safety sense and a, you know, in any type of safety sense, as well as to just be constantly having to look, critique, you know, that can't feel good for them either. You know, like my supervisor has to force me in. It doesn't feel good for me to tell you when you're messing up, you know? So like all of that's emotionally draining too on our trainers. And when able, A, we should be praising them, and B, we should be providing a break, you know, so they can have a little time to just do the job. Cause that's what I've heard trainers say is like, you know, some days I just want to come in and just do my job. I don't want to have to teach someone else to do the job. I just want to come in and do it, you know? So really working that like days for them to just do their job every once in a while, I would imagine would go a long way, especially for these centers who have the same people training, trainee after trainee,
Well, and I was looking with me and the trainer I have now, my lead, I was looking at the schedule when I took over and I was like, holy cow, like there had been enough turnover, and it wasn't anything culture. It was just like people moving out of the area or, you know, just different life circumstances and, or they find jobs that like pay way more or have better, like who's not going to take a job that like, you get to work four tens and make way more money with less stress. Like, come on, you can't fault them for that. But I was looking, I'm like, her and I have been training nonstop for, I think, like 2.5 years.
Wow. See?
2.5 years. And we're just like, keep going. But we were like, and it's been an adventure.
But yeah.
I mean, we're still, that's why I'm like so glad. I'm just like, we just need the one more part-timer.
Yeah.
Just one more.
And I mean, you know, we speak of, you know, the perfect picture when we're talking about things, right? Like I am totally understanding that sometimes you go 2 years of training people over and over again, right? I mean, that's just our reality. But I think the thing with these conversations and this podcast and these things is that we want to put it in the back of people's minds that we should be aware that if we can make this change, we should. Because I think we get in dispatch and emergency services caught up on like, this is the way we've been doing it, you know, forever. And because I had to do it this way, my trainee has to do it this way. And I just don't believe in that. And I think just planting the seed, you know, is going to be helpful at some point when we can get a little relief, you know, in these training scenarios and situations.
Yeah, I am not a fan. I just so hate the phrase, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Kind of that mentality. Right? I'm like, well, if it's not broke, it can still be improved a little bit. Like, it doesn't
mean my 23-inch TV isn't broken, but maybe I want a 50. You know, like that's.
I still want the TV. I just want an improvement. Like, but it's just like that's how things get stagnant, and like there's no progress, and it's like you have to be willing to try new things like once in a while. Like, it doesn't have to be drastic by any means, but you can try little improvements, and if it works, great. If not, well, then you know how you were doing it before. Like, there's no harm in trying something different.
Yeah. And I know all the dispatches out there are like screaming right now, change bad. Let's not do that. You know, but I promise change is okay. And the best thing about change is it doesn't work. You can change it back. It doesn't really go away. You've done it before that way. And just be willing to try new things when able, you know, because it could change the whole way you do this job and make your life a lot easier.
Yep.
So you're a coordinator of a multi-agency peer support team.
Yes.
How do you manage that? Like, what does that look like?
This was fun. Okay. So this, I'm going to get nerdy. Like, this was super fun. So we had, it was kind of, sorry.
Like, technology hurts sometimes. That's what we're getting at, people.
That whole change thing. No, but, it wasn't necessarily a peer support team. We just had like a big group of us locally that all certified in doing like the critical incident stress debriefs. And it was people from all different agencies and some chaplains. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where it stopped. And so we never had, like, it wasn't really an official peer support team. So there's my agency, and then the sheriff's office is a completely separate agency. And we were, the sheriff's office, the undersheriff came to me and was like, we need to figure out a peer support team, like a legit peer support team. Mm-hmm. And we need somebody to coordinate it. And I was like, oh, me, because I love mental health stuff. I love taking care of people. And I'm also one of those people who's like, oh, I want this done, and I want it done correctly, and I want it done well. And like,
no, not a dispatcher.
I'm just being awesome. But I said, okay, how do you want like this? How do you want that? And he's like, you know what? Run with it. Do what you want. Mm. So I was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have like the quarterly trainings, and we're going to have multi-agency because, I mean, I'm like, we're going to have road, corrections, probation, dispatch, EMS, fire, a couple of chaplains. And I'm like, we're going to build this well-rounded. And I sent out letters to each of the agencies and said, give me three names that you would feel comfortable talking to. Some people put no one, some people put Jesus, some people, you know, and then, you know, I actually
got be busy. I don't know if he's going to be able to come to the quarterly trainings. I don't know.
We'll do our best, but, and so it was like, and it was interesting to see some of the names, because there were some names that, you know, there was like, I could think of one name that came up like several times. I was like, I would not have thought of that person, but several people would be like, that's someone that like I would go to. And then, you know, as I needed, you know, a few more people, I like kind of sat back and looked at our agencies and just looked for people that, you know, others just naturally gravitated towards, and just kind of built our team there. And so we're like still very new, like everybody just got certified. And we just had like last week, we had it's called the QPR training, is question, persuade, refer, is a suicide prevention training. Mm-hmm. We just did that. And it's just been really fun to get going, because I've always just been really passionate about first responder, like mental health, and, you know, taking care of each other, taking care of ourselves, because I don't feel like there's enough of it. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I'm like, I just, especially us being in a small community, like when something happens, it's just, I mean, the whole community is affected. Like, if you think about it, if we were to have, like, I don't even like to say it out loud, if we were to have, like, heaven forbid, like an officer involved shooting, mm-hmm. well, if we lost, like, you know, one deputy, that's like a sixth of, you know what I mean? Because we like have so few people. And then with all of us being so close knit, and like a lot of us related, because it's like, you know, small area, it's just crazy. And we just need to check in on each other. And I just really wanted that to be successful. So we're still, you know, taking off and building it. but so far it's going great and everybody's been really, really excited about having this.
No, it sounds wonderful. And I mean, you know, wellness and peer support, like these are all things that are so much more ingrained in our culture now. I mean, it's still probably a very uphill battle in the sense of, you know, we like to sweep things under the rug rather than address them. But to know that, you know, the idea of peer support has reached like the rural areas, those rural officers, you know, like it matters so much. Like every agency should have a resource for their people. Someone just asked on my YouTube channel about like therapy for dispatchers, like, cause you know, it's all the, if you're interested in this line of work, you know, so people ask me a lot of questions as they're considering getting into this. And that is a question that comes up, like mental health, what does that look like? It's a tough job, we deal with trauma. And just the idea of having a option. I think that's kind of what it comes down to. You may never use this resource, but it's there, you know, and before it wasn't. And so I think it's amazing that you're putting that together, not only for your people, but for the surrounding agencies, because I'm sure you guys are just supporting each other so much in that type of area.
Right. No, thank you for that. Yeah. And it's funny, like one of my good friends and I were just visiting last night about this, how he's a retired LEO. And he moved into, now he's like a first responder trauma specialist. And my personal opinion, he's probably one of the best in the state of Oregon, really is. He's just phenomenal. He does like he does the regular, you know, cognitive behavioral. He does EMDR, if anybody's familiar with that. He also with EMDR does what it's called brain spotting, where he can kind of pinpoint your brain as he's doing things like where you're holding trauma. Sounded like total woo-woo. I was like, okay, until he's doing a debrief on me one day. And he's like, yeah, look over here. I'm like, not interested in that. And he's like, yeah, that's kind of where you're. And I was like, all right. And he just recently got certified in something that's becoming more and more of just like an amazing asset for people. It's ketamine assisted therapy, where you can actually do therapy with people under like a dose of ketamine. And it just really kind of like breaks down those barriers and opens some channels. And there's just some, especially with anxiety and depression, and it's just almost miraculous for suicidal ideation. So it's like a lot that like in our Eastern area to have access to that's crazy. But him and I were talking about how we almost just cringe at the word wellness anymore.
Yeah.
Just thrown around so casually, like, you know, oh, wellness, eat right, go to bed right, you know, do all these things that are just almost like impossible when you live the lifestyles we do. And I had a dispatcher that made a really good comment when I was talking about a wellness class once that really stuck with me. And she said, I'm so tired of wellness because some of these centers I see, they're like, we're doing a wellness training. And it's almost like saying, we're running you into the ground and we're treating you badly and you're exhausted, but we're going to tell you how to cope with that rather than making any changes. Do you know what I mean? When she said that, I was like, wow. But that trauma specialist and I, when we were visiting about this last night, he said that he's worked with, you know, fire and LE, some EMS, and he's really started working with dispatch. And he's like, you guys have so much turnover. And he's like, so many problems with staffing. And he says, what I've learned is that you guys are just totally neglected when it comes to your trauma, when it comes to the things that you deal with. And like, isn't this refreshing to hear? And he says, so like, while I like to work with like, you know, LEOs and like fire and all these other things, he's like, his passion and where he wants to go, because there's nothing for it, is dispatch. And like, I just wanted to tear up because it's like, you don't hear that often.
Yeah.
You don't hear people that are like, we love our dispatchers and we want to take care of them and preserve them. And he's like, there's no reason you guys should be suffering and have short careers and have that turnover when all this help's available. We know it's available, but you aren't being given access to it.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. 1,000%. And it's just one of those things, like giving me access is not denying your reality. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of the vibe I get sometimes, is like when it gets into a debate about like, my trauma versus your trauma. I'm in the field. You're answering phones, like this stuff, right? Like, it's just like me seeking services for whatever my trauma is from the same guy who's giving you services as someone who's in the field does not negate your trauma. No. I'm not saying that you don't have trauma and that your trauma is not valid. I'm just saying we have trauma. Our trauma is valid as well. And we want some help too. And that's kind of like, it's not a, we're not trying to compare and contrast here. We're just, both realities exist. And we're trying to deal with both realities and take care of both realities for both sets of people. Right.
Right. And I mean, I know there's always the argument of, well, not always, but you often hear it that, well, you guys aren't on scene.
Yeah.
Like, but it's like, I can build images in my head. Mm-hmm. Like there's scenes that I can still picture, and they're probably worse than they actually were, because like part of our job is to imagine what people are going to. Yeah. And so it's like, we do live with those images. We do see those things. And I mean, it's just, yeah, that like, to me, to think that there's anybody in dispatch that gets left behind, or like, I just get so frustrated when I hear of like, you know, multi-agencies or centers that just like, you know, don't do stuff for incidents or even smaller things. And I've tried to really normalize mental health talk in my center, like try to follow up with people if there was something that like I know might trigger a previous call they had, or like just the other day, me and one of my employees were joking about, you know, something with some of our family members. And I'm like, you know what my therapist told me about that? Like, I've just paid him some money, but he's literally helped everyone in my center.
Look, this is what I learned at our therapy session today, y'all.
Like, my leader was there before me. I'd be like, oh yeah, I had an appointment the other day. And she's like, oh, and what was said? Like, what did you learn this time? But just like making those things okay to talk about. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying you have to overshare, but to just normalize that like getting help is a good thing.
It's we should all be talking to our therapist, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and what I love about that idea and that notion is like, because I know people have tried therapy, you're like, no thank you, you know. And it's like, therapy is like swiping on a dating app. Okay, you gotta keep swiping, going out, seeing if it's a good fit, and then, you know, until you find your right person, because not every therapist is a good fit for you, you know.
No.
Not only are we gaining trauma from this work that we're doing, but we bring our own trauma. You know, we're everyday people too. We're out there in the world interacting, and we have our own baggage, and, you know, we bring that into our centers as well. So, you know, that's part of what's, you know, things that trigger us is who we are as people and what's happened to us in our personal lives, you know, and we want to work through all of that too. Right. And finding the right therapist who gets it, understands who you are as a person, who you are as a first responder. I mean, all of those things matter, and it might take a little bit to find that right person. So you got to do the work, you know?
Yeah. And like my primary, he's not law enforcement specific, but he's done a lot of debriefs. And he's one of those that like, if insurance company calls somebody in to, you know, assess or help with a situation or an incident that may happen, like he's kind of that guy. So he's done like a lot of debriefing, but I mean, he does phenomenal work. Mm-hmm. He does really great work. And I mean, he came over, I had my first, I love that in our line of work, I can say this, I had my first homicide. I had my first homicide. And he came over and realized that no one, like we were part of the city at the time. We were city employees. And they had asked everybody else in the city, because the person was a city employee. And they said, you know, does anybody want to meet with somebody? And apparently everybody else said no. And I was like, sure, I'd like to, you know, get ahead of this in case there's issues. And we were sitting down and visiting and, you know, going over some stuff. And he's like, well, so what are you doing outside of work to like relieve stress, or what are your hobbies? And I was like, I
picks up a flat.
I go home and I'm a mom. And then I go back to work, and like, it was like, and so then that's how him and I kind of like, you know, how, you know, became, you know, had our relationship, was that, you know, helping me just that insight of realizing like, okay, I'm becoming my career, and that's not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
Mm-hmm. What's your identity outside of this?
So hard.
It is really a tough ask, right? Because you know, how do you separate yourself from that? A thing you do 8, 10, 12 hours a day, you know, 3, 4, 5 days a week. And,
yeah,
you know, the manner of situations that you're dealing with, it's just so heavy. And, you know, quite frankly, when you go out into the world and, you, and people ask what you do, like, they want to know about all the calls, all the stuff, you know, it's, right. it's a topic that's interesting enough. So you end up diving a little bit into those things and, you know, really finding the language to be able to articulate what you are outside of this job is very reaffirming. It's very like grounding. And right. I think it is something we all should really work at. You know, I think having that language and being able to tell someone to answer that question, it probably will open a lot of doors for, you know, how we're thriving in our personal lives.
Right. And it was like, my husband and I were, we say out of town, because like when we go to anywhere that's like populated that like might have a, I don't know, Target or, yeah. you know, we were at, I don't know if you guys have crumble cookies down there, but they are like these, oh my gosh, crumble cookies.
So good.
So anytime we go out of town, it's like we have an order of crumble cookies, like from, you know,
hey,
everyone. It's like, we're making a run. And so we were out of town and we stopped by Crumble and he's like, well, like, what do you want? And this week just happened to be like my favorite cookie lineup, because they have the ginger and the, like, I know this is very important, the ginger and the peppermint and like the cinnamon roll. And I'm like, this week was made for me. So I get there and I was like, well, so for my office, I want to get this, and, you know, I'll get a pack of these. And he's like, I thought you were getting something for you. I'm like, I'm at work all week. They are for me. So, you know, just like things like that where you're like, I'm doing something for myself, but it's going to be at work. Or when my husband brings me flowers, he's like, you didn't bring them home. I'm like, well, I'm going to be at work. Like,
or am I going to look at them at my desk?
Those things. But yeah, it's interesting when you were talking about people want to know like what goes on at, you know, our jobs. Like here, since we're such a small community, like Scannerland is crazy. And so it's like, oh man. Yeah. So like, even when I was like prepping for this, I'm like, you know, you got to be careful about what you talk about, because I could make a reference to just like something random is like everybody could know. So like when I, so when I talk about like, I, you know, I can talk about this from like a personal perspective, but like, you know, taking in this is, I don't know how often this happens in larger centers, I don't think that much, but like, you know, me taking calls, you know, from, you know, my aunt or my dad or my cousin or like, you know, all these different things. And then, or just like people that we know well in the, you know, community, we go out and people are like, they want to know what happened, like specifically to someone everybody knows.
Yeah.
And it's like my go-to line, I tell my trainees is, I'm not at work. Sorry. Yeah. Don't know. Like, and it's funny when you hit that point in your career, I remember like we were talking about the early years. It would be, I'd hear sirens in town. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on? What's happening? Where are my people? And now I hear sirens. I'm like, not at work, not that problem.
You know, that is so true. Because when I first started at my agency, out in Sacramento, I lived around the street from my comm center. Like literally, like someone went and got my catalytic converter one day. I walked to work. I was like, well, I guess this is right around there. I probably should have been walking all along. Maybe this is my answer. But yeah, like sometimes, you know, in Sacramento, it's a city that has its concerns in the criminal justice crime area. And sometimes I walk out my door and when the helicopter would be overhead, I'm like, do I need to go inside? I'm like, listen, like, what's the announcement? Texts were like, hey, the helicopter's over my house. Like we good?
Just wondering if it's here or down a block.
Right. But now I'm like, ah, they would have told me.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that, because where my house is, like when, like I was saying, we were part of the city, my fence line actually runs along the city hall parking lot, which is part of dispatch. And I had a gate between like my yard and the parking lot.
Oh my God.
So when things would start going to hell in a handbasket and dispatch, and they would need, you know, an extra person. Like I remember I was sitting on the couch one day and I heard, we have fire alarms here. Since we have fire, like volunteer fire departments, we have like a town alarm that sounds like Silent Hill that goes off when there's a call. I hear the Silent Hill alarm going off and I'm sitting on my couch and my phone dings and all of this is one word from the dispatcher working that says, help.
And then all of a sudden she looks out the window, Cammy's like, slow running, hitting the fence.
I got my jammy pants on. I throw on a hoodie. Like, I got my slippers on. I book out the back fence and I'm like headed across the parking lot. And the people with the apartments, like, they're right there, like, what's going on? I'm beating cheeks over to the office.
Right. In my head, you're scaling the fence. I mean, you're running like you have a warrant. You know,
girl,
you're
hitting the fence. 5 foot. I am not scaling anything. I'm not scaling anything. Also, it's like National Short Person Appreciation Day. So,
oh, hey, I'm gonna have to tell my fiance. She on that end.
Yeah, 5 foot. So I'm not gonna be scaling a lot.
Gracefully, oh my gosh, that's amazing. That's so funny. I just the realities of this job, man. I tell you, from big agency to small agency, I mean, it's just, it's wild out here in a good way. Most things. Well, as we're coming to the end of this amazing episode, I'm going to ask you the question I ask everybody, which is, what advice would you give someone who's considering a career in dispatch?
Oh, yeah. And I saw this question. I was like, this is a toughie because there's a lot. And I would strongly, strongly suggest, almost before you even fill out an application, seeing if you can do a sit-along. That you can find an agency where you can ask questions, you can kind of see, you know, what the work looks like and get an idea of it before you even decide to go further with it. And then if you decide to go into public safety, try, like we had just talked about, make sure you keep that and protect that outside life that you have. Mm-hmm. And remember that, you know, dispatching is your career job, but your family is your family. Mm. Like, that's something that's just precious, and try to keep some compassion. It's very easy to get jaded, especially when we deal with the same thing and the same people, or, you know, just get worn down. Try to keep some of that compassion. Mm. And, you know, remember that for the most part, like, people are just people doing the best they can.
Yeah,
like, they really are. And take care of yourself. Like, we were just talking about, like, the trauma and the mental health, like, take care of yourself, take care of others. So that those would be my words of advice.
Cammy, thank you so much for this wonderful episode. Honestly, I've learned so much and I've had such a wonderful time. Also, like, when we first dived in, I was like, we're 10 minutes in and we haven't even talked about who you are. So.
That's all right.
Yeah, no, it's been really wonderful. And I feel like the folks who are listening are going to be taking a lot of gems away from this one. So
thank you so much for
joining me, for all you do, all of those things. Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
All right, I'll be right back with you. All right, everybody, that was another amazing episode here at Let's Talk Dispatch. Again, yes, Cammy, thank you so much for coming out, you know, representing for the smaller centers. You know, we definitely need to give a platform for folks who are doing this job, no matter what size of your center, because how we do it, we can always learn from each other. There's always something to learn. So thank you all so much for your continued love and support. If we're in the new year, which I think we will be, happy new year. Welcome to 2024. Let's make it a good one. And until next time, stay raspy, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let's Talk Dispatch, a Raspy Dispatcher production. If you like the podcast, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star review, and of course, tell a friend. If you want to be a guest, head to theraspydispatcher.com and check out our additional resources. Until next time, stay raspy, everybody.